What's up, y'all? My name is Ian Edwards, and welcome to the Soccer Comic Rant. If you're listening, you can hear this at allthingscomedy.com, SoundCloud, Libsyn, iTunes, probably maybe World Football Daily, and wherever else that I don't even know this thing is being posted, you could hear this at, and you're listening to it right now there. Let me know if I haven't mentioned something you're listening to this podcast on it. Our sponsor is on thevolleyapparel.com, and you go there, click on that site, and you'll find an array, a beautiful array of tanks, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts with soccer emblems on them. And they have them in male and female. And even last night I was rocking one. I went to the LAFC game and I rocked the OTVA shirt with the owl. And people was like, yo, that shit is tight. So use my promo code, Comic Rant, get 20% off your order, and get yourself some stuff. So I'm solo today, and I wanted to get this podcast up early because a lot of stuff happened this weekend. So before I even get into the Premiership, I want to talk about the MLS, and I really rarely talk about the MLS, but I'm talking about it this week because I went to a game yesterday. I went to see LAFC play Colorado Rapids. So it's my first time to the LAFC stadium, and I gotta say, it probably won't be my last time. It was a very fun experience. Like, the game was good, and LAFC won 2-0. Some good football was played on both sides, and both sides created good chances. It didn't look like I was watching like four-year-olds play, and they were all bunched up on one side of the field and kicking each other in the shins. It was well-organized football. There was a good skill level out there, and I was impressed. But the thing that impressed me the most was the stadium, which kind of reminded me of Dodger Stadium. Like, it's a 20,000 seat stadium, I think. And when you walk in, any level you walk in on, or wherever you walk in, you could see the game, you know. And the homie who hooked me up with two tickets is a listener of this podcast. Hooked up some seats in, well, they weren't seats. We were with the, Daniel Sandoval. What is he called? The section we were in. It's the first time there, so I don't remember all the terminology. But he got me and my friend Doc seats. But again, they weren't seats. We were in the... So let me read this thing that he sent me. So I was in the freestanding seating. Freestanding seating. So it's just people standing. All the fans, the people with the drums, you know, the people who, when they found out in 2015 that the LAFC was going to be Los Angeles's new football club, from then on, they were like, fuck it, we down, we doing this. And they have like a traditional English cheering section right behind one of the goals. And it is lit back there. They are drumming, they are dancing, and they are trying to shake those stands till they collapse to the ground. Throughout the entire game, they exerted more energy than all the players on the field. And that's a great feeling if you're a home team to know you can play in front of that crowd. And this crowd is like, they just happy. It's a honeymoon. Like, the crowd is happy just to have a team to support. They want to support something. They want to put their energy into something. And this is what they've chosen. And they're not bullshitting. It's 1,000% on. So shout out to everybody in the LAFC standing seating. You did your thing yesterday. I thoroughly helped me to enjoy the game and create an amazing atmosphere. They had songs, you know, LAFC. They had songs for players, for team. They had it all. They were doing it. It was like you were in watching. Like when I was a kid, I grew up wanting. I saw it was an FA Cup final. And the day before, I saw the players arrive on the bus. And they got off the bus in their suits and their uniforms. And I said, man, I want to be that one day. I want to be one of those soccer players. And it's as if the fans of the LAFC have watched European soccer and have watched European fans. They've watched them sing. They've watched them celebrate. They've watched them cheer. They watched them shout for their teams. And it's as if the LAFC supporters have said, I want to be a supporter of a team like one of those in Europe one day, and I want to cheer, sing, drink, and support like that. I want that experience. And as if now is their chance to achieve their supporter goal, and they nailed it. So LAFC, I don't know how you did that shit, but you fucking killed it. The atmosphere. Like, I've been to Galaxy games and it wasn't like this. I saw a Galaxy win a final, when it win an MLS final, and it wasn't like this. This is bananas. So shout out to the homie, Daniel Sandoval. He's at Milhouse the Barber on Instagram and for the ticks. And yeah, man, dope. Fucking game. Great job, LAFC. Keep that shit up. And you're doing good too, so in the league, so keep that shit up too. All right, so onto more upsetting news. Like, I'm sure Brighton Hove is happy, but as a Man U fan, I'm not. And some of the things I talked about on last week's podcast mattered in this week's game for Man U, and it's just going to matter for the rest of the season unless we fix some things. So I'm not even going to jump around in the tables. I'm just going to get to Man U's game on, I think we played Saturday first, Man U versus Brighton. And we looked horrendous, bro. I mean, we're Man United, we're playing Brighton Hove, and we did not look good. And we just got problems. And we should just deal with those problems. We shouldn't fuck around. So I think, like I was going to say a second ago, we have two choices, Pogba or Mourinho, right? And who do you choose if you're the Man U board? Now, Pogba's worth £100 million, I think, or dollars or euros in that area, one of those. And we have Mourinho, who has a contract. But who's worth more to you? I'm sure you're going to lose money if you lose Mourinho, but you're going to lose more money if you lose Pogba. Because, you know, there's people buying jerseys. If people aren't coming to see Mourinho coach, they're coming to see Pogba play. So it adds interest when we play Champions League games or just games anywhere to have a player of that magnitude, especially after he just won a World Cup on the field for us, you know? Like, you're not going to come to see Mourinho coach a bunch of, like, nobodies. Like, those days are over when he made nobodies somebodies. You know, people want to see good players. And Pogba is one of the world's best players. And he doesn't look good when he's playing because he's not happy with the coach. And there's a there's an apparent rift there. Like, so, and I don't think Mourinho's mature enough to fix that rift. Because everywhere he goes, he has rifts with players. It's his coaching style. And it's worked, but it's beginning to work less and less. And because I don't think Mourinho has the ability to go in the dressing room or go speak to Pogba and say, hey, man, I might have been wrong about some things. What do you think? And I don't think he feels like a coach should do that. Then somebody has to go. And Pogba just has more value as a advertising asset to Adidas, to Man U, and to the value of the whole franchise. He's only 25. He's younger. Plus, why would you choose a coach who's a nomad anyway? Like, Mourinho would probably only, if we chose Mourinho and we let Pogba go, we sold him, got some money, for a coach who's only going to be with us for one or two or at the most three more years, because he's never really been at a team more than 3 to 4 years. So me saying 3 years more is just being optimistic, you know? So we're going to lose Mourinho at some point in the next few years or years or year anyway. So why not keep the 25-year-old just based on age, you know? So before we lose Pogba, you know, we don't have to play a lot of games. Let's lose Mourinho. And another reason why we should lose Mourinho is because Pogba's not the only player who's not getting along with him. You know, there's other players, like key players, that have a problem with Mourinho. So it's like, if you lose Pogba, you still have other problems between Mourinho and other players. But if you lose Mourinho, then everybody, all the players get a clean slate. Now, the reason why you don't fire Mourinho right away is because you have to find a replacement. Now, so that's the only excuse I'll take from Man U, is, well, looking for a replacement. So you can't fire him and not have a replacement. So I get that. Because it's Man U, you gotta do things organized. You gotta have an organized replacement. So I say, you figure it out and then you fire him. But get on it. Start looking. And a lot of people are saying Zidane, but I just don't think this is the right fit for Zidane. But I could be wrong. But I say, where the hell is Ancelotti at? Let's get Ancelotti, baby. Like, I think Ancelotti could definitely do something with this team. Like, I'm watching, like, a lot of the shows, you know, with English players as pundits, and they're talking about the gap between Man U and Man City and Liverpool. And let me talk more about that. I'm saying let me talk more about that, like somebody was stopping me. I'm the only one interrupting me. So I just have a lot of thoughts in my head, so I want to get them out. So yesterday, the game this weekend really looked bad if you compare where Brighton Hove finished last year. We finished second. They almost got relegated. Right? And they, even though we had the ball around 60% of the time, they dominated us. And we looked bad. We had no cohesion. We didn't know how to attack them. We didn't know what to do with the ball. Players on our team looked scared. They pressured us. They had tactics and a game plan. We had no heart. And I think we had no heart because the players didn't want to play for Mourinho. It was clear. Like, Mourinho in the press conference said, well, Man U paid for mistakes that they made on the field, but we wouldn't have been in the position to make those mistakes. We wouldn't have been in the position to have made those mistakes if those players had gone out onto the field from Man U, had gone onto the field with a desire to play for their coach. We just wouldn't have been in a lot of those situations, and we would have played hard. And we would have fought fire with fire, which we didn't do. Like, They pressed us like they cost millions of dollars and they took the ball from us. It was like watching sometimes like a Liverpool style team play where they just put pressure on your players and take the ball from you. And they confuse you and they took away our heart, which we didn't bring much to the game anyway, so it wasn't much heart to take. And then they got more comfortable, you know, during the game, and we got more uncomfortable and more unsure of what to do. And my thing is, you have a bunch of players who are disheartened and don't want to play for the coach. And at that point, I don't care who you are. You know, you just can't be the coach of Man U. You know? And I just don't think it's the players. Like, as a coach, Mourinho can say, I don't have the players I want. Like, he made a statement saying, I'm just a coach. I'm not a manager, meaning I don't buy players for the team. Woodward does. It's in his hands. So whatever I put on the field, it's Woodward's fault. But you bought the center backs that played yesterday. You bought Pogba. And you're buying people who aren't playing for you. But when, you know, Lindelof went far into the World Cup, Pogba won it, you know? Fellaini went far in the World Cup. It was like Lingard went far in the World Cup. So why aren't these players playing for you? So this is definitely a Mourinho problem. Like, he's dug himself a hole that I think his pride and ego is too big to get out of, you know? So I say we lose Mourinho as soon as. That's the quick fix. And start looking for a guy. And everybody, I don't know where Ancelotti is. If you're free, call Man U's hotline. Let him know you could do this, because I think you could do this. You know, another big problem is, you know, Brighton Hove. They almost got relegated last year. We came second. But, you know, people, you can say, this is just two games in, you lost a game. But people were upset about our style of play, our lack of cohesion, and some of our efforts last year when we came second. You know what I mean? People were like, if you watch football, you could tell we're a little off. You know? Like, I think Spurs came fourth, but their fourth looked better than our second. Just the way they pulled it off style-wise. And, like, I saw pretty much every Spurs game last year. And when they lost, it was just rare when they won, they won. And when they lost, they played like they were trying to win. And then when we won sometimes, it wasn't convincing. And when we lost sometimes, it definitely wasn't convincing. And we just had very few convincing games as a team last year. So something's got to give. And it's not just Pogba, I think Mourinho has a problem with. He also has a problem with Woodward. So Woodward, you just got to pull the plug, baby. Start looking for a coach behind Mourinho's back. It's time to get down and dirty. And look for this backup. Plan B, son. It's Plan B time. You know, it's early. The earlier you do it, the better. I know it's tough, but the earlier you do this shit, the better, man. I mean, you bought Mourinho players he wants. And then if he doesn't like them after their first game, it's just weird, man. You just can't be like that. You have to be more nurturing. We have a squad, man. We got players. We got Fellaini, who can play ball. We got Pogba. We got Matic. We got Sanchez. McTominay. We got Lukaku, even though he could be better. We got a young Rashford. We got a Lingard. We got Smalling, Bailly, Lindelof. We got Shaw. So we're not that far off. We're not far off from City or Liverpool personnel wise. We're far off from them cohesion wise. You know, we got to get a coach that the players want to play for. So that's what we need to do. That's just my speech on the Brighton Hove Man United game, which was a goddamn disaster. Just a disaster. And, you know, got to give it up to Brighton Hove for coming out with a game plan and executing it. They lost the week before, and they're like, let's work hard this week and try to get a point or some points, and here's the plan, and the players executed it. And sometimes they press one of our players three at a time or two at a time and get the ball back from us. And we just, you know, one thing we didn't do, just simply tactically, is like sometimes when one of our players would have the ball, there'd be no one to pass to. Like we don't even, I don't know what type of practice where we don't even surround our player with the ball with support so that he can have options. Simple shit, you know? Baye made mistakes. Lindelof made mistakes. These are people Mourinho bought. And he wants us to buy more defenders. We need to focus on coaching cohesion instead of just trying to buy, man, spend money. We got enough. Coach, your job is to coach, then coach. You say you're just a coach, then coach, bro. Now you don't have to worry about buying. How about you focus on coaching since it's your only job now? So that's my spiel on Man U Brighton. That's my spiel. I watched the Cardiff Newcastle game. It's a pretty decent 0-0 game. I wasn't bored. I didn't plan on watching it. It came on like 5:30 in the morning. I got home like 2. I'm like, let me sleep and wake up for the other games. I'll sleep through this game, and I could not sleep. And I'm like, it's an hour before the game, and I'm awake. And I'm like, I might as well just go downstairs and watch this game. Watch the pregame and watch the game. And if I fall asleep during it, fine. That's when I'll sleep. But I didn't. I watched the game, and it was an entertaining 0-0 game. Newcastle, like both teams played competitively. Both teams tried to score. There's a lot of action, good passing, you know, both teams played better than Man U. Sorry, it always goes back to that. As teams, they both played better than Man U. Now, Newcastle, let's say this. Newcastle had a man taken off, got a red card. He was just subbed on. But they probably could have had another man taken off, Kennedy, earlier before that. Even if you're a Newcastle fan, you say, well, that red card was not a red cardable offense. Well, Kennedy's was, and Kennedy should have been taken off the field. So Newcastle should have been down one man regardless. And maybe Cardiff too. You know, the way Harry Arter fouled after he lost the ball. Maybe he should have had a red too. But he got a yellow. I'll give him a yellow for that. He kicked the guy with his shoelaces, not his studs. So I'll give him that. But with 10 men, Newcastle get a penalty and a chance to win the game. And Kennedy, who probably shouldn't have been on the field, let the Filipino goalkeeper save it. Wasn't that great of a penalty? And I want to give props to the goalkeeper of Cardiff. He was about it all day, sharp as shit. Didn't let anything through. Newcastle had some early chances. Like, there were some chances in this game, and our goalkeeper was there. He spread himself big, played the best game of chicken ever. Like, never went down early, never dove early, just stayed up until the last minute possible and made some good saves. Well, Cardiff's goalkeeper, it's a Filipino goalkeeper. So, yeah. First time a Filipino's ever played in the Premier League, and he did fucking good. It's the Manny Pacquiao of Filipino soccer players. And he should have been man of the game. Should have been man of the game, from what I see. So that was the Cardiff Newcastle 0-0. Not a dull fest. Entertaining. You know, had elements of good football. You know, one man got sent off, red card, penalty, and some great goalkeeping. So, Fulham versus Tottenham. Fulham went up. Well, Fulham versus Tottenham. Let me just restart that. My bad. Flubbed that. Tottenham just does what Tottenham does. They come out, they play football, they're organized, they know what they want to do, they know what they're trying to do, they look good doing it, and they did something that I recommended, that they use Lucas Moura more, and they have. They've been starting him with Harry Kane, and he didn't score last week, but this week, Jesus, he bananaed the shit out the ball and put it in the corner of the net for the first goal of the game for Spurs in the 43rd minute. Good to see Lucas Moura on the board, man. I think this guy, he's going to look like a new signing for this year, even though they signed him last year. Yeah, but he cracked this game open with class. He spread class on the slice of bread on that field. And yeah, great banana ass goal. And then Fulham equalized in the 52nd minute with Mitrovic. And it's like, all right, we'll make this a game. Second half, we score first, boom, game. But then Kieran Trippier scored. He's from the England squad. Free kick from the same position that he scored practically in the World Cup. And I'm like, first of all, Fulham, your goalkeeper, and your players, did you not watch the World Cup semifinal between Croatia and England? Were you the only people in England who didn't see this game? Because that's exactly what Trippier did in that game, is how he scored his kick against you guys. So you got to watch the World Cup more, and maybe you could have saved or avoided letting that goal in net. All right. And then Harry Kane scored in the 77th minute, something he's never done in all his Premiership seasons, is score in August, and he broke his August duct. And Kane had a good World Cup, scored there. Way better than when he played in the Euros 2 years ago. And he scored in the World Cup, and now he's scoring in August. So now he's greenlit to go. So Spurs, they did their thing. Just looking at the percentages, possession 60-40% for Spurs. 11 shots on target. That's a fucking lot for Spurs. 3 for Fulham. 25 shots overall. That's a lot. But yeah, Spurs, you did your thing. And you beat Fulham. West Ham, Bournemouth. I hate West Ham because of Chicharito. Because he's a diving, whining, just complaining, prima donna. You know, they just turn his shorts into panties. Like, why is he playing in shorts? Just put a skirt on him, bro. Because the way he whined. So he kind of was fouled and kind of earned a penalty, but mostly not. It's just because of the rules today. And he rolled around and they gave the penalty. And I like Bournemouth, you know, as a team that's not in the top five. If you want to watch attractive football, I always say this, watch Bournemouth. So I'm glad they came back in this game and put it to West Ham. And, you know, show Chicharito, you don't just dive, play. So Arnautović scored the penalty that Chicharito, I'm going to call him Chicharito, created by his kind of flop dive style, almost legit, but not really almost legit penalty that he earned for West Ham. And then Callum Wilson and Steve Cook took the game into their own hands. And Bournemouth, their goals, they earned them. They played hard. And Bournemouth any day over any team Chicharito's on. Let's see who's next. Leicester versus Wolves. And this is Wolves' second game in the Premiership. And Wolves. Leicester lost last week to Man City. Wolves, yeah, didn't happen this week. Did not happen. I'm trying to remember what Wolves did last week. I think they had a comeback victory last week. Let me go to the tables, see where Wolves' points is at. I think they had a comeback victory last week. So Wolves have 1 point. So the first week they drew with Everton. I think they scored late in the game to get that tie. So they showed a lot of character. And then Leicester, old champs, made sure they got all the points in this game. Vardy got sent off for like a heinous, vicious challenge. He's like, I'm going to get the ball and legally be able to kill this guy with my left foot because I'm going to get all ball. But the ref was like, no, man, you don't have to do that to another human being in 2018 in football. It was like such a vicious sweeper tackle, unnecessary. So he got sent off. He had a red, straight red, and he's gone for probably 3 games. But despite that, Leicester still won the game. And Wolves came out early in this game, and they hit the post a few times and created some chances. And Leicester was lucky enough not to concede and get 2 goals. But now we're going to see Leicester next week with no Mahrez because they sold him and no Vardy. So, I don't know. This 3 points, you know, you lose something in these 3 points. You know, it's not like a clear 3 points. You lose a Vardy. So, we'll see how they do next week. If not having Vardy affects them, there's no way it won't. It's just a dumb move by Vardy, man. Just dumb. I don't know. I get what he was thinking. I'm gonna hurt this guy, but I can do it legally, because I'm gonna get the ball first, and then I'll hurt him, and act like it's just the continuation of the tackle. The ref was like, nah, bro. That's some hatchet shit. And I talked about Wolves hitting the post, you know, in this game. They're hitting the Leicester post and not scoring, but then ended up hitting the net on an own goal for the first goal in the goal of this game. So they couldn't score at their end, kept on hitting at the Leicester end, kept on hitting the post, but did not miss the net when it came to scoring on himself. And Madison for Leicester, a player that I noticed last week who played good against United, scored. And is basically the ball got deflected off him. He took the shot, ball got deflected off a defender and beat the keeper. So it could also go down as another own goal for Leicester. Well, let me check. Let me see. Let me go to results, premierleague.com, and see who they gave that goal to. So I'm going to go to Leicester versus Wolves. Boom, right here. First one own goal, second one they gave to James Madison. All right. So James took the shot, got the deflection, but yeah. All right, I gave it to James. See what else. See what other games we talking about right now. Next game on the docket. Everton versus Southampton. And sorry, Lee, but your team got beat 2-1. Team got beat 2-1, man. So I think Southampton got 1 point last week. And no points this week. So you got 1 point out of two. And, yeah. You got 1 point out of two. Some of the players that Everton bought last year, you know, helped start this game off right. And I think that's the funny thing. Ex-Arsenal player who I think originally was from Southampton, who now plays for Everton, scored first for Everton. So that's a long way of me saying that it's a long roundabout way. A really long roundabout way of me saying Theo Walcott scored. All right. So basically that's what I'm saying. Theo Walcott scored for Everton's first goal. And Pickford made a great save. Super save. Straight out the World Cup. Pickford. Boggled the ball, but then made Danny Ings' shot, point blank range, shot to the dome, go off the post. And Danny Ings eventually scored. I think he's on loan from Liverpool to Southampton. Scored, but not before Richarlison, who Everton paid money for and who is paying back the money that Everton paid for him, scored his third goal. In his second game for Everton. So look out for this kid. See what he does this season for Everton. Because, you know, he's doing some things. I'm going to slide down. Keep going on to the other games. So Arsenal versus Chelsea was evidently the game of the weekend. And Jesus Christ, man, this was a fireworks show. People say, when you ask somebody, hey, how was the party? It was lit. And it feels like people use that word willy-nilly, you know? You know, they use the term lit when they shouldn't be using it. But this game, Like, first of all, Chelsea came out, scored twice immediately. I mean, and you're like, oh, shit, man, same old Arsenal, you know? But then Arsenal just came back. But first they came back by misses, some close misses, like a Aubameyang miss. That like, I get it. Like, the ball was coming at you, and you're, like, sideways, but you got to put that ball in the net. And but you could see that Arsenal could create chances and that they found Chelsea's vulnerabilities. And you could see, like, this two games in, Arsenal played Man City and Chelsea, and they have no points. But I see where they have more promise as a team than Man U. Like, we have 3 points. We won a game. And Arsenal lost two. But I still see the progress of Arsenal more than I see the... And we have a World Cup winner. But I still see the progress of Chelsea more than I see of Man U. That's what I'm saying. And that's why it's a big problem over there in Manchester. Arsenal, they went down 2-0. Happy Pedro scored, but I'm even happier Morata scored. Morata scored a great goal. Now, they're criticizing Chelsea's defense for Morata's goal, but Morata had a one-on-one, I think, against Mustafi. I mean, that's what you would want. Like, he didn't, like, get the ball with no defenders around him. He got a ball with a defender on him, and he had to turn the defender and beat the defender and outrun the defender and then also beat a good goalkeeper. Those are good odds if you're the Arsenal defense. Like, you didn't just get, like, an open guy with no defender around him. Like, Morata had to be Morata. He had to do some shit to score that goal. So I would not shit on the Arsenal's defense for that goal. Like, both these teams play attacking football, and even when you play all defensive football, a team can cut you open. So, yeah, when you attack and try to score goals and that's your mission, sometimes you're going to be open. I don't think you have to fix anything great in either of defense. You know what I mean? You just have to, if you're playing attacking football, you just have to score when you attack. And that's it. And then sometimes you don't. Goals are harder to come by. You know? But I don't think Arsenal... Like, I can see their progress. Like, I'm more optimistic for them than I am for Man U. I'm more optimistic for them than I am for a lot of other teams. And, you know, there's, like, Ozil. Like, the days of being a praised one-way player might be over for you. Like, people are like... It must be tough being Ozil right now because he's estranged from his Germany team because of something that happened in the World Cup with a Turkish politician. And now, like, even pundits who I've seen, like, respect him and take his side before are like, yeah, they might have to drop him, you know? But we'll see. We'll see what Arsenal does. We'll see what Arsenal's coach does. I just like what they're doing. Like, Guendouzi, I think, and I hope I'm saying his name right. 17-year-old fucking kid with long flowing clown hair. Playing like holding midfielder. He's all over the fucking place. And he's just balling his ass off. He looks like he's played in the Premiership his entire life. Like, what a find. What a guy. He's also French. Like, this guy's playing so fucking good. Even though they lost two games, like, just as a fan of football, you're like, this is a plus. This guy's a plus to have on your team at 17 years old. Like, he's French. Like, he's tall. He's lanky. Like, he's making positive passes out the back. I'm like, look, I don't want to say anything and jump ahead, but this dude is playing. He kind of looks like Pogba out there when Pogba's at his best. I think he's 17/18 in the Premier League now. He just played two of the top teams in the world. But he just played two teams back to back who have won the Premiership before. Feel me? He just played and he looked outstanding against both, even though his team lost. So if you got that to look forward to alone, like, I guess we have Luke Shaw, but this guy's doing way more than that. So just that alone. And Mkhitaryan, like, Arsenal's problem is they have all flair and all soft. It's like soft serve ice cream. It's sweet, tastes good, but that shit's going to melt fast because it's not hard enough to withstand like every team in the Premiership. So Arsenal just needs to get tough in the right places, and they might have to sacrifice some flair, but they'll just end up being better defensively. I don't think it's their defenders necessarily that they need to change, but they put a Terraria in, and he's still the one that contributed to the last goal being scored, even though he had an effect when he came in. You know, like, he let Hazard get away from him. He watched some of that goal develop, the winning goal that Marcus Alonso put in the net. After, you know, he was directly responsible for being a fan and watching Hazard do what he did. You know what I mean? Terraria. Yeah. And Aubameyang, just, you got to put those chances away. This is literally a game. Arsenal lost a game 3-2. They could have won 5-2. Like, no bullshit. Like, they had that many chances where they should have put at least five of them in. They could have, like, blown Chelsea out. That's how exposed Chelsea was. That's how attacking, when Arsenal got to attacking, that's how lethal they were. Yeah, Terraria, you got to follow Marcus Alonso. You're with him. You can't just let him drift away from you. That's your job. Defensive midfielder. Do it. But, you know, this game came on early in the morning, and I was kind of sleepy. When it came on, it was early. It's like 5:30 out here. But this game was so live, it woke me up. This game was like drinking five Red Bulls. It's just streaks of players going up and down the field at a law-breaking pace, passing the ball, crisp. Just vision on these players on both teams. It's just beautiful ass football. Way more beautiful football than Man U even came close to playing. Sorry to keep bringing that up, but it just hurts. Just hurts. So, Chelsea, Arsenal, bravo. Great game. Chelsea's got two wins. Arsenal's got two losses, but you have hope. You have potential. Like, you knew the season was going to start tough, that you had to play Chelsea and Man City, and it's going to be tough two-season openers, but I just believe in you. Like, you didn't get blown out by Man City, and you came back into this Chelsea game, tied them 2-2, could have had more. This game could have been a tie or a win for you. I like what Mkhitaryan did, but he's also, you either got to play just him or Ozil, or they both got to be better defensively. You know, that's the issue. They have to step up another side of their game if this Arsenal team is going to win something, because that's where their problem is. Or you got to get just better defensive midfielders like Xhaka. You know, it's like, he's just not it. And Arsenal has struggled to find that guy. You got to find a guy who's just not good at passing. He's just tackler. Not a nasty tackler, but you just, any guy with a hint of flair does not want to do the dirty work for this team. So you just, or the team looks so good attacking, everybody wants to be one of the good looking attacking guys. But good luck, coach. Figure it out. Ain't my job. Watford, Burnley. Watford won this one 3-1. I'm just surprised that Burnley would let Watford get three past them. Like, this is Burnley. It's like one of the best defensive teams of last year. And it's kind of shocking. Yeah, it's just kind of shocking for that to happen to Burnley. And let me see. Let me go to results. Let me go to tables, because I want to see what Burnley did last week. Because I think, so here's Burnley. So they drew 0-0 against Southampton, and they lost 3-1 this week to Watford. So I don't know if Burnley's coming into the season with a hangover. A complacency hangover. Because these results are not typical of the Burnley that I'm familiar with. I am not familiar with this side of Burnley's work. You know, the Burnley I know, they bust their ass. They maximize and they get the most out of their players. You know, that's the Burnley I know. So this Burnley, like losing to a Jekyll and Hyde Watford. Like, a Burnley I know could get a point from the best Watford. That's the Burnley I know. Like, the Burnley I know could at least tie. And they did tie at one point in this game. They went down one. And they scored on a header by a fucking hawk of a header. Like, that Burnley player soared up there above everybody else, looked down at the ball, saw the part of the net he wanted to put the ball in the back of, and just put it in there. And then after that, they proceeded to concede two more goals and lose the game. So I don't know what's going on with Burnley. I mean, they're not used to being in the Premiership this long. They might be relaxing a little bit and think it's like, oh, we know how to do this now. But be careful, because that's when you find out it's the wrong way. It's the wrong mentality. So get it together, Burnley. And Watford, impressive start for the season. Troy Deeney, Fat Deeney, doing his thing, scoring with the outside of his foot. Great goal. Just watch the diet, bro. Just, you know, I just want to see you play longer and more and make, you know, score goals and make runs like that. So, you know, just take it easy on the British breakfast. That's all I'm saying, Troy Deeney. Troy Denny's. Denny's is a popular restaurant out here where Troy Deeney would eat if he was in America. All right, so who's next? Who's next on the docket? So we did Brighton Man U, Crystal Palace Liverpool played today, Monday. Entertaining game, great football on both sides. Again, Crystal Palace won last week and they lost this week, but they looked good both times. And they really had a shot in this game and they had some chances. And you know, you're playing a star-studded Liverpool team that has, you know, great players, you know, Mane, Firmino, Salah, Keita, who they just bought, and Wijnaldum, Milner, scored the penalty. And good news for Liverpool is they had two clean sheets in a row, because stopping people from scoring was one of their problems last year. So they started this season with two clean sheets, and they got a deep bench. And I think they're set. Like, if I was a coach and I wanted to start my season, right, and I wanted to be better than last season and I want to have depth, I'd be like, if I looked at my lineup, I'd be like, oh, I'm in pretty good shape. Like, my starting 11 is Mane, Firmino, Salah, Keita, Wijnaldum, Milner, Robertson, Van Dijk, Gomez, and Trent Alexander-Arnold. And then my bench is Henderson, England's World Cup captain, Daniel Sturridge, who's had a good preseason and scored last week, Alberto Moreno, and Adam Lallana, who's getting better. Is a season off now from his injury and should be a great chance for him to do some things this year. Simon Mignolet. Okay, goalkeeper problem. All right, so let's not yell that name out so loud. But you got Shaqiri and you got Matip, you know. So Liverpool just sounds solid. And that's a part of the problem why Man U fans are going to panic, because City has a great starting 11 and bench, and so does Liverpool. But that's the thing. So do fucking we, Man U. We have a great bench and we have a great starting 11. They're just not being coached by our coach, who's only a coach and not a manager. They're not being coached to the best. They're not being coached the best. When their players are not being maximized. And listen, I'm just going to go back to that Spurs game where we lost to Spurs last year. And Mourinho got into it with Pogba. And I think he took him out that game. But he argued with him on the sideline first and then later on took him out the game. It was just an embarrassing game, the way we played. We looked like we didn't belong on the same field with Spurs, who we finished ahead of in the table. But here's the thing. Here's the thing. Can I remember the thing or did I just forget the thing? I think I just forgot the thing. And the crazy thing is we play Spurs next week. So I would, after losing this week, I'd hate to be embarrassed like we were that game that day. But I think I definitely did forget the thing. But I'll say something like what I wanted to say. And so I think I remember. My thing is, Mourinho was angry at Pogba's positioning in that game. He gave him a job to do. Spurs were overrunning us, and he felt like Pogba wasn't doing the defensive job that he's supposed to do. When I watched all of France's games in the World Cup, all of them, and Pogba's positioning was exceptional. Even a friend of mine who didn't really know who Pogba was called up and said, I forgot what number Pogba was. Maybe let's say he was number nine. He was like, who's that number nine? He's this friend of mine who grew up playing football as a kid and played on all these club teams. Who's that number nine? His positioning is exceptional. He's annoying the shit out of me because he won't give Peru any room, because my friend, he's part Peruvian and Jewish. So he was rooting for Peru to beat France. And he could not get over Pogba's positioning. And that means Pogba was playing a very disciplined defensive midfielder role. And also, he would go forward when he should go forward. And it's the point is, Pogba will do what he's told if he's being told to do it the right way. It's not that he doesn't want to defend. He's a box-to-box guy. He wants to do both. He wants to be all. But the problem is what Mourinho wants. And it's not the best Paul Pogba. And then when he doesn't get the best Paul Pogba, he shits on Pogba. But this just seems to be Mourinho's fault. All right. So again, I digressed to getting rid of Mourinho. But Klopp has just done an amazing job. But Klopp has to win for Liverpool. And Klopp has to win something this season. You know? And he has to win something. You can't just, I know Liverpool are happy with their players, they're happy with their team. They went to the Europa League final the first year Klopp was there. And then last season they went to the Champions League final. But Klopp, you got to win something. So you showed your board that you're a competent coach and they bought you the players that you wanted. So now you have your team. So that's how it works. And I don't think Mourinho has shown Ed Woodward and our board he's a competent coach. Because they bought him players and he says, oh, he wants to toss them. It's like going shopping for an outfit. And you're like, I don't like this outfit. I bought it to wear it. I wore it once. I know it costs $100 million, but I'm just not going to wear it. You fucking better wear that fucking outfit. Mourinho. All right. So, Crystal Palace, you acquitted yourself well. You lost one of your players in this game. One, Bissaka. I think he's Dutch, but this guy's an amazing player. Now, he had a red card for a foul that he had to probably make. It was him. Salah was running away like a goddamn train, and he's a killer, and he knows how to finish, and he had to stop Salah. So he did what he had to do, and he took one for the team, and he got sent out of the game. But I think Wan-Bissaka was a player last week who had a great assist to Zaha. So I would look out for that kid. He's probably going to be gone maybe 3 games now. But look out for Wan-Bissaka when he comes back. And it's one of the few sendings off where everybody gave him a hug when he was walking off the field. Like they all knew, like, man, you had to do that shit. So, and thanks for trying to stop him. So that was beautiful. So I'm sure his head is up in the changing room. It's not this, that you that was a professional foul. Liverpool cut you open. You're the only one there. And so Benteke had one good chance with a header. Had another chance where he just blew the ball over the whole goddamn stadium. I think he was trying to hit a goalpost on Mars with that shot. And don't be hard on yourself. That header you took was a great effort and the goalkeeper saved it. So, you know, you just have to relax. And I think the goals will come. You might not be a great, but you can be way better than you are now. And Zaha caused trouble, but again, sometimes likes to hold on to the ball a lot and show off that he can hold on to the ball. I think if Zaha, like, just plays a simpler game, he could make his team better and be such a better player. He'll achieve all the things that he wants to achieve and prove all the things that he wants to prove, but Sometimes he goes real individual on people. So that's it for all the games. That's all the games. Let's see what all the big talk is. Manchester United haven't discussed replacing Mourinho with Zidane. So that's one headline. I don't think that's a good idea. Look for Mario Ancelotti or somebody else that I haven't thought of. And Man City have been warned against complacency. So that's not really a headline. Claudio Bravo ruptures Achilles tendon at Man City training. I mean, he wasn't playing anyway, but I guess they just lost a good backup. But Henderson is there, and goalkeepers usually last the entire season. I'm sure they have a backup. Arsene Wenger to visit Liberia to receive honor from George Weah. So that's good. The president of Liberia, whose son is an American, Timothy Weah, and plays for PSG. And also, speaking of PSG, Luigi Buffon is now the goalkeeper for PSG. And it's funny. Buffon been playing so long. I just read this. Some friend of mine, Lloyd, just sent me this article of Buffon is now playing against the sons of some of his former teammates and adversaries. Like, he used to play against George Weah in, I think, Italy. And now he's playing with George Weah's son, Timothy, on the same team for PSG. And then this weekend, I forgot who PSG played, but he played against Marcus Thuram. I think it's Marcus, but it's definitely Thuram, who is the son of Lilian Thuram, who Buffon played at Parma with and Juventus with. So he's playing against the son of a guy who used to be his teammate. That's how long Buffon been in goal. Buffon been around longer than football. That's all I'm saying. So keep it up. I'm going to go to next week's. Let's see what the fixtures are. I'm not going to do the tables yet because it's too early. So I'm just going to see what's the games next week. Who's against who? So Wolves faces Man City. And they play at Wolverhampton. So I don't think the one sure thing you could say about football in the Premiership is that Man City is probably going to win next week. I hope they don't, but yeah, I don't think they're going to lose that. Arsenal versus West Ham. Like, West Ham has some turmoil going on, and hopefully Arsenal can get their first win at the Emirates and take advantage of that. Sorry about that. My bad. So I put my money on Arsenal, and I'm going to be happy to watch this game to see Chicharito lose and to see Guendouzi play a good-ass game. Love that kid, man. Do your thing. Bournemouth versus Everton. Tough game. Tough call. It's at Bournemouth. I don't trust Everton. Maybe they're better now. Maybe their mentality is better now. But I'm not sure, man. That's either a tie or a win for Bournemouth. Huddersfield versus Cardiff. I shouldn't be trying to go through all these games individually. I should just pick 3 or 5 games to call. So, but I'll do Huddersfield, Cardiff. And it's being played at Huddersfield. Cardiff needs a win. I go Huddersfield on this one at home. I'm going to go down to Newcastle versus Chelsea. And I'm going to say Chelsea, even though the game's at Newcastle. And Newcastle has looked good from what I've seen, but there's something missing. And They have more missing than Chelsea does. If Chelsea does have anything missing, Chelsea's got 2 wins. And even though they're on the road away at St. James's Park, I'm going to go with Chelsea. And the biggest game next weekend, in, as far as two names clashing, a two-name clash, Man United versus Spurs at Old Trafford. And we don't look good. Spurs does. But tough call, y'all. Like, I know I want Man U to somehow magically pull this behind-the-scenes chaos together, but they probably won't. Spurs are more united, and we'll be lucky to get a defensive draw out of this one. So I'll say that. I won't say we will lose. We'll get an ugly defensive draw. We'll take an embarrassing-looking, shameful point. And we'll take that. And, yeah, so that's it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Tell some friends. My name is Ian Edwards. Love y'all. I'm at Ian Edwards Comic on Twitter and on Instagram. Have a great week. And enjoy some football, y'all.